It's that time again, time for another Ask Bill Anything segment, where you, dear listener, bring your questions to our very own good friend, Bill Hassinger. Let's get started. And David, I feel like I have to ask, where's Bill? He's supposed to be in studio.
Yeah, he called. He's running late and he won't be on time.
Now you tell me? I just started the segment.
Look, I don't know what you want from me, Jim. I just told you.
No. Tell me before the show, not some future time, not the present, but the past. Tell me in the past.
I did.
Okay, never mind. Let's keep going. So folks, thank you for sending in your questions to this week's ABBA. I mean, ABA, I should say. I'm sure they're good and full of information for Bill.
Jim, you sound like you have a brain injury.
I'm twisting in the breeze over here because we never talk or communicate anymore. You just sit over there, like in the shadow, silent, like Hamlet's father.
What?
Oh, okay. Here he comes. Sorry, I'm late. It was my wife's fault. She needed another bottle of nitrate. And what are you going to do, right? Right? Am I right, everybody?
Yes, you're right, Bill. Thanks. So what do you say we get to this ABA? It's not like we have anything else going in our lives. Just you, Bill.
Sure. I am very happy and gladsome to answer questions from your listeners. I look forward to the 10 or 12 that you have for me, as I am a very popular character on your show, and they love me, and I love them, and I love you, David. I love you.
That's weird.
Okay, let's not derail this 2 minutes in, please. David, fire up our first voicemail.
All right.
I was calling to ask Bill Hassinger if he would go back to selling pallets, because I liked him when he sold pallets, and I liked his pallets. I'm not a fan of essential oils marketing, with their little marketing. Or the other thing he was selling. Was it a Tibetan monk thing? Going to China. I forgot. That is all. Goodbye.
So it was my understanding that I would be here to answer questions, and I don't believe this caller left a question. She just criticized my poor life choices.
She may have, but we did specify that listeners could leave comments. So what say you, Bill?
Well, first of all, it sounds like she called in, swallowed her phone, and then started talking.
It's a little muffled, but I think we all understood it, Bill.
Well, my comment to the lady's comment is that selling essential oils is a joy of mine, and it reflects who I am as a person. And I just gotta be me. She can't stop me from me. I mean, from me being me. I just gotta be me. Like that song from Perry Como.
Wasn't that Frank Sinatra?
It was Dean Martin. I mean, it was Sammy Davis. Guys, we're getting off track. Bill needs to be Bill. Okay, got it. Everybody good? David, fire up the next one.
That's it. We only have the one.
We only have one?
Yes.
Did you think it would have been a good idea to tell me that? We dragged Bill all the way down here on our dime for only one voicemail of Beth Ann sounding like she was talking to a phone buried underground.
I did tell you.
But in the past, not now.
Right.
Okay, thanks, folks. That does it for Ask Bill Anything. Thank you for listening to our good friend Bill, and we will start the show now.
But what about me? I came all this way, and for what? For nothing, that's what.
David, turn his mic off.
No, don't.
Let's start the show.
The podcast you are about to hear contains the histrionic and problematic conversations of a stodgy Presbyterian and a casserole-loving Baptist. Their interactions are volatile at times and unpleasant most of the time. In many nations, this is considered a mild form of torture. We strongly advise you to stop this nonsense and go do something useful with your life. Otherwise, if you insist on listening to this mess, welcome to the lightest form of flogging.
Thank you, Deep Voice Man. I also welcome you to the lightest form of flogging podcast, episode 5-9.
Flogging?
Pretty crazy. 5-9, flogging. David. 59. I am your sad host, Jim. I am your a superhero Cape Crusader Batman host. Not really. I'm your sad host, Jim. And sitting across the room from me at a contraction negotiated 29 and a half feet is my co-host, David, who
spent most of his childhood clapping in Spanish. Now then.
You want to know where I got these scars?
Why so serious? And one of those stories was about his dad, wasn't it? His dad did that stuff to him.
Why so serious, son?
Oh, whoa. Hey, calm down over there, Creed Bratton. Which reminds me, one of my favorite Creed Bratton bits is when he came in on Halloween with blood all over him. And it looked like he was just had a costume. And he didn't know it was Halloween dress-up day. And he said, wow, incredible timing. Well, anyways,
we're not gonna... like that time you came here with a bloody shirt on Halloween.
Yeah. And he said, Jim, is that a costume? And I said, no. What do you mean? Oh, yeah. Fantastic timing. Hey, we're in the show now.
Is this a show?
This is a show.
We just did the show.
I don't know if you can call it a show, but we just did a show. And now we're doing a new show.
I don't really think you can call it a show. There's no visuals.
Is that part of the inherent definition of a show?
Well, like when you show someone something, nobody expects to like close their eyes and put on headphones.
We're presenting ideas to people.
Right. So we could call it the demonstration.
The lightest form of flogging demonstration.
Like whoa, show and tell.
Okay.
Right. This is just tell.
This is just tell. Well, but hey, man, our culture has gone wrong. I mean, lots of podcasts and radio shows have been called shows.
I'm aware of this.
Radio theater, they're called shows. Mm-hmm. Have we been doing it all wrong, David?
Potentially, yeah.
Well, let's turn the tide today. You and me, we'll start a revolution. We'll call it the lightest form of flogging audio presentation.
Tell number 59.
Tell number 59. Well, I'm going to keep going with show. I'm just going to go ahead and be annoying that way because I just want to do what I want.
I'll allow it.
You can't stop me. Do we have follow-up? I don't have follow-up.
I do have follow-up.
From when we stopped recording 10 minutes ago?
No, this was actually from the Bill Hassinger segment.
Okay,
yeah. This was about... it was really beautiful because you wrote the script for this.
Yes.
Listeners may not know, Bill is not a real person. Jim writes the script.
Yes.
Listeners probably know that.
They know it because but the vocal tone is too similar.
But that's one that's subtle enough, but still I think that somebody could be unaware that you're doing the voice.
I try and make my voice higher and Bill's lower. That's all I do.
Well, and you're like you talk like you've got like marbles in your throat. Like,
rice pudding, actually.
There it is.
Although Pastor Maynard Gustafson, he's real.
Anyway, what I was telling you, what you scripted me is telling you about how I told you in the past.
Yeah.
That just brought to mind Augustine in his Confessions arguing that there is no past and there is no future. Those are only constructs. There is only the present.
Why would he say something silly? A future is a construct.
Right. But the present is a real thing that we experience. The past is also a construct.
It's not, because it happened.
Right, but it's not happening, so it doesn't exist.
It was a present not that long ago.
Only things now exist.
But no.
Okay, so something from the past exists? Like, show me three-year-old David.
It did exist.
Right, it did exist. And things in the future will exist.
But when it stops existing, when it stops existing, it doesn't become like not real. Like, real, I think, you know what I mean? Is that what I'm trying to say? Real can be something that did exist in the past, but no longer exists now.
Right, but it's still a construct in the sense that...
I don't think the past and the future are the same. You know what I mean?
No, they're different constructs.
Okay, well, great. I guess we can settle on that. But why are you saying this?
Oh, just because I did indeed tell you in the past, and it was just funny how the past just kept happening, and you kept being upset because you wanted me to do it in the past, but by the time you wanted me to do it in the past, I had already done it in the past.
That's right. That was part of the funny joke and bit.
Yes, it was delightful, but it made me think of Augustine.
Okay, good. It was delightful, Jim. That's what most people say.
No, I mean, you sometimes write things for me and I'm like, this is not something I would say, but this is totally something that would happen between us.
Good. Maybe I'll have you write your stuff from now on. You know?
What I should probably do is rewrite my lines so that they sound more like me, because I'm pretty sure between that and the fact that I'm not well-versed in the method.
That's fair.
The method acting.
You're talking about method acting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to do that more. I'm trying to be actually disgusted with you when I say the things that you've written for me to be discussed with you about.
Very difficult to do.
Yeah. I just think about your views on government and baptism.
I'm not, as I have shown, I am not as Baptist as I could be. Let's at least agree on that.
That is true.
I am the worst Baptist representative that has ever lived.
You are alone in a forest covered in creepy crawlies.
That's right. That's the German word for Angstflügen.
Right. Or charismatic orphan.
Okay. Wandering the Matt Chandler's field, digging and running and playing, isolated from the rest of the world. Hey, so we have a show to get into. But before then, we're going to do Music break.
Wow, you were really adamant.
Yeah, I know. And then we'll get to the main topic. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. So, hey, back into the show we go. We're here. We have another topic for you all, slightly related to our last week's episode.
I have another item of follow-up.
You do? What is it?
Yeah, when we do the musical breaks,
yeah,
I'm okay with them. Yeah. Could you not dance?
It gets really weird. Dancing to that song.
Yeah. You
know, of all songs to dance to.
I don't know why you have to take off your shirt.
It's very weird. I don't know either. It's all about inhibitions going away. And now that it's
you should have more inhibitions.
And now that it's even more awkward than it was before, which is saying something.
Well, I tried.
Let's get into our main topic today.
Talking about joy.
We're talking about joy. Well, not really joy.
No.
We were going to talk about joy.
And then we realized how ironic it would be on this show.
Yeah, I know. We just didn't have any. Our minds were vacant as to how we could conjure up that emotion for our listeners. Well, last week we talked about a bit of a heavy topic.
Why is it heavy? Everything's always heavy. Is there something wrong with the Earth's gravitational pull?
Who wants to listen to a podcast where the host talks about his dad leaving and how sad it makes him?
I mean, really,
when you think of why did we do that?
I don't know.
The decisions I make.
I'm just trying to make the Doc Brown reference. I tried last episode too.
You just did it again?
Yeah.
What is it? Tell me.
Why is everything always heavy? Is there something wrong with the Earth's gravitational pull in the 1980s?
Okay.
It's Back to the Future 1.
I'm sorry. It's been a while since.
Ah, that's heavy.
Though. That is on a list of movies I can't wait to show my kids. So I'm really excited about that one.
You should watch it first.
Well, I remember the scenes that I don't want them to see.
Right.
But when they're old enough and able to interpret certain objectionable scenes like that, I can't wait. It's just,
now you'll know.
It's just the power of nostalgia, David.
The time travel machine, the DeLorean goes back to the future and then. Mm-hmm. It goes back in time and then it comes back to the future.
Once it's in the past.
It is not a way back machine.
Yeah. I just want to make that clear, Jim.
It's a time travel machine. Nobody. I've invented a way back machine. It only needs 11 gigawatts.
Marty, I made a way back machine. Doc, that's just the dumbest idea ever. Once we're in the past, we can't go back to the future. Marty, you're a genius. You know, I'll make a time machine.
Who was the high squeaky voice?
That was Marty.
No.
Come on. Yeah. Doc. Yeah, Doc.
Are you making fun of his Parkinson's? Like, what's happening?
No. Though, in character from me. So
he's doing a lot better, though. Did you know that? What's his name?
Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox. He's not like well, but like he was on
the medication that you take when you're on Parkinson's.
No, I was going to say a show. He's like doing live action stuff again.
Last time I heard he did well. He had
Designated Survivor.
He was on that show.
Yeah, he played a lawyer and he's like holding things and like reading them. And like he's still shaking, you can tell.
Yeah.
And they kind of made it part of his character, but like he's actually able to like talk and
They put him on a Law and Order episode playing a lawyer. Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't a law. I think it was The Good Wife. But yeah, he just had he touched things.
Yeah.
And it made it look just fine. Well, he tried to do, he starred in a show. Mm hmm. I think it was called the Michael J. Fox Show not that long ago with full on Parkinson's.
Hmm.
And because you can film your way through that kind of stuff. But I thought you meant he was improving in his condition was improving.
I think it is because I think at one point he was in such a bad state that like all he could do was voiceover work and he wasn't even doing very much of that.
I see.
Like he was in Atlantis, the Disney animated.
Did he voice the main guy?
Yeah.
He also did Stuart Little. My kids just watched that.
There you go.
Well, what an interesting way for you and me to talk about this.
We'll have follow up next week since we don't have any more Kevin DeYoung stuff. We'll have more Michael J. Fox follow up.
Well, we're going to start this train with Michael J. Fox and get everything wrong about him. Wait,
it's not even Parkinson's, guys.
He has a cold. What's wrong with him? I know this is it's I could feel it beginning already. I can even point out the listeners that are going to correct our many Michael J. Fox errors for us.
I'm just really hoping the name designated survivor is right, because Sarah and I have a bit where when we watch a show, if the name is longer than like three syllables, I consistently get the name wrong.
Okay.
Like we're watching Monk. I always get that right. But like I always come up with different like stupid names for TV shows. And so I'm not even 100% convinced that that's why designated survivor.
Maybe I watched that show in season one and didn't like it and moved on to something else. So maybe David,
maybe,
which is why your memory is always so sure when you have watched Friends.
Yeah. It's just one syllable or the office,
right? Yeah. Parks and Rec though. I don't know.
You get three syllables still.
You get a little fuzzy in Parks and Rec.
A little bit. Yeah. You think, well, if it's Parks and Recreation, then who knows?
Yeah. You think you're watching Cheers.
See, I haven't seen Friends or Cheers.
Okay, good. Well, everyone will know your name.
But Monk is one syllable.
Monk is a great show. Reflective of you. So you and I are sitting here talking
about... I do relate to Monk.
We're talking about TV shows.
Uh-huh.
We're talking about Back to the Future. We're talking about Michael J. Fox. Somebody Because of nostalgia, which is a weakness second only to what, David?
The neck.
Hello! You were right there when I needed you. You're so dependable.
I will always be here, Jim.
Your Presbyterian dependableness.
Now, if you're elsewhere and you need me, I will still be here. Like right here.
And I won't be able to help you, but I'll be here.
I'm always here for you, Jim.
You've got a friend. So so last week we talked about sadness and how I related to sadness because of past events in my life. And this week I wanted to take a more positive tone.
Right.
And talk about how positive events in our past influence us today. Mm-hmm. But we're going to take a slight pivot from that and talk about how nostalgia works for you and me, how we relate to nostalgia. Mm. And I don't think you and I have ever really discussed if this is a thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I openly say I'm a nostalgic guy and I have no problem doing so.
Do you keep physical artifacts of things?
Yeah.
And like reflect. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Big time.
Right.
Big time. I have, they're in my closet. It's just a box of things that are from my youth that I hold on to and cannot throw away. I absolutely cannot throw them away because it's ridiculous.
When I was a wee dispensationalist attending a dispensational university, I went on a study trip to Israel, or Eretz Yisrael, as you would say.
Yes.
And there that year I was doing it was a program, it was called Bible and Israel, tip, classic dispensational school. You do all your Bible classes and some Jewish history classes all in one year. And I did it because I wanted to do the Bible classes because I was excited to learn about the Bible. Yeah. And I was a dispensationalist, so I didn't object to like having random Jewish history classes thrown in. Yeah. But
would you?
What that meant was for that school year, I had the same classes with the same people every day, 5 days a week. We probably spent somewhere, and I think I was doing between 17 or 18 credit hours.
Whoa.
Both semesters.
Yeehaw.
I think it was 36 total.
I did that once year. And almost died.
Well, this is an easier, honestly, it was an easier course than or an easier set of courses than you would normally expect at college. But anyway, I got to know those guys really, really well. Some of them I'm still friends with to this day. I mean, I'm still friends, like friendly with all of them, but like some of them I keep up with, like when we're going out to Pennsylvania, we're going to visit some of them. But you know how when you go on a trip like that and you're going to be in the airports, you all wear matching shirts. Like that's just a Christian thing. Like if you're on a missions trip, you have these, like, they're always like really poor quality t-shirts. Like, it's like somebody took a sack and sewed sleeves onto it.
Okay.
And then like a clip art logo.
Here's your uniform. Put on your shirt. Put it on Instagram.
Well, we had these.
Yeah.
And my mom, they're getting ready to move. And she's going through all this stuff that I left, left at home. And she found this shirt and she's like, do you want to keep this? And I was like, well, none of ours ever fit any of us. Like they always felt like, I don't know, like a really awkward person was hugging you while you were wearing them just the whole time. And so I'm like, well, I'm never going to wear it again. And like, I don't really rep things anyway, but I might wear it around the house if it was comfy, but it's not comfortable at all. So I told her, I said, I'm going to take a picture of it. So keep it. We're going to be out there in 2 weeks. I'm going to take a picture of it and I'll post that to Facebook and tag everybody. Yeah. So there's an element of nostalgia here, but I have no physical objects that have nostalgia. If I were to have that.
Do you ever feel a desire to hold on to something or they just do not have that effect on you.
Yeah, I don't really tie things to things. Like, I don't tie emotions to objects in the way that I think. And I'm not, this isn't like an autism thing. This is like, I think a lot of
no,
like,
yeah,
like
you're
split,
right.
Maybe 50-50 humanity or something.
Yeah, I know I'm in the minority.
You might be in the majority, but not like, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, but I'm like vocally fine with it. But what I mean is like the popular sentiment in psychology is that nostalgia can be problematic.
Right.
And I think everyone believes that, because a guy who's stuck too much in the past has a tendency to not
play in beer league.
Playing beer.
Reliving the glory days.
Oh, it's so sad to watch those guys when they go up to the plate and they just start digging that hole.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
They just start, I mean, they just, and like the pitcher is like staring at you.
Is this metaphorical?
The catcher is like staring at the beer league guy.
Right.
The umpire is getting impatient.
Right. Well, the umpire's job is to be impatient. That's how he shouts strike so loudly.
Yeah. He's just digging the hole into by a home plate to get his good footing. And then he puts his hand up and gets his bat ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's ready for the pitch and misses. You know, it was just, no one likes the guy living in. Right, you're saying.
Well, and at its core, nostalgia can, like, there are two ways, I imagine, to go about nostalgia. I'm not very good at this, so I'm guessing.
I will listen intently.
One is to be thankful and to reflect back and be thankful to God for the nice things.
That's not nostalgia. I mean, it kind of is.
Well, but that's definitely what I mean, is like, that's one way that you could do it. The other way is to wish that things were that way. And that's just discontentment.
Right. That's where the problematic nostalgia comes in. I read an article about this topic and they distinguish between two types of nostalgia.
I love when things distinguish.
You just started smiling over there.
You're distinguishing. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, this is great, Jim. Come on.
I remember a time earlier in my life when I was distinguishing. It was great. I wish things were like that.
David gets nostalgic about the times where he distinguished in his life or other people distinguished for him.
Like Francis Turretin.
Yeah, Francis Turretin. Great. Yeah,
my BFF.
Yeah.
I have a t-shirt with his face on it. Doesn't fit correctly.
But you keep it in your closet.
I wear it in airports.
Okay, we're getting happy over here. There's two types of nostalgia. There's personal nostalgia, the positive kind.
Hmm.
So let's say you enjoyed your trip to Israel, mm-hmm. and you still are a dispensationalist, and you did keep that shirt. You have no intention of wearing it, but when you look at
I figured
shirt,
I was only going to have to keep it for a few years because the rapture is coming.
Good point. Now, dispensationalists look at their mission t-shirt and kind of get a little sad, don't they? That's why they don't have them. They throw it away. So personal nostalgia, where you're brought back to maybe a time in your life where things were going well and you were happy and you have lots of positive memories associated. So like, you know, maybe a kid who went hunting with his dad and he still has the rifle or he still has something from that trip. It's positive and it's okay to consume that nostalgia, that personal nostalgia.
Nom nom nom.
And some psychologists argue that that helps people through adversity. Good personal nostalgia can aid someone going through adversity. They're more resilient. They can cope. It's a good cope. Nostalgia can help you cope. Hmm. You're skeptical over there.
Well,
do you not agree with this?
We have to define terms.
Okay.
Nostalgia, I looked it up because I wanted to understand what you meant by it. I'm not trying to correct you.
That's fine.
I only do that about baptism and singing and worship and the covenants.
Everything and about
government.
The church.
Oh, the church, yes.
Things we can't talk about anymore, right?
Yeah. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus.
Numbers. And Deuteronomy.
Yeah, also Numbers in general. So here's the definition that I found. A sentimental longing.
Okay, good.
So or wistful affection for the past.
Don't know what that means.
Typically for a period or place with happy personal associations.
Good so far. What's wrong with that?
Well, I just don't understand how...
What's wrong with that?
How longing for things to be how they aren't is good. Like...
Okay. So let me finish what I was going to say then.
Oh, then you should do that.
The bad kind of nostalgia. And it's I'm not even sure if this is an official phrase for it because it sounds so disappointing, but they called it historical nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people.
They're idiots. Historical nostalgia is like, it's ignorant.
Oh, you're
masochism.
Being serious. You're being serious.
Historical nostalgia is
so you know what I'm talking
masochism
about.
Masochism bred of ignorance.
Yeah,
I think so.
It's people that they're on Facebook that their profile picture is out of focus and it's like looking up at their face and they're not smiling. And
are you talking about baby boomers?
Yes. And they're always complaining about those dang millennials.
The glory days.
And they long for the way things used to be.
Right.
Kind of forgetting that it was crappy back then too.
Right.
But we'll not.
Well, and when you said historical, I thought you meant like outside of my life. Like I wish things were like.
Well, they do say that.
Yeah.
I wish things were back where they used to be. Something.
But back before I was born.
Before. Like, yeah. Before, you.
Like the early church. Wouldn't it be great if we could go back to the early church and be persecuted by Nero?
Yeah. I don't want to be persecuted by that guy.
Every historian I've ever heard talk about historical nostalgia is like, if I could choose to be alive at any time in past, present, or future, it would probably be present.
Okay.
When people ask me, you know, that Carl Truman talks about, people ask me, wouldn't it be cool to be alive during Martin Luther's day?
No.
And he says, no, do you know how they made beer in Martin Luther's day? You need pure water to make beer. So what they would do is they would put up signs the week before they were going to make beer that said, we're going to make beer this week. Please don't defecate in the river. I'm very happy being alive now. Thank you.
The beer tastes so much better now. Back then, it had kind of this earthy funkiness to it. There's a reason why.
Yeah. Oh, earthy, well, yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of taking it to a bit of an extreme. Like, I'm not talking about people who wished they were living in a time that they didn't even experience.
Right.
Though that does, I guess, fit.
Right. Well, that's it was the historical yeah. word that threw me off.
Yeah. So, yeah. And this is kind of why I said, I'm not sure that this is an official term because it's misleading. It doesn't sound right. But the point stands. Mm-hmm. They're longing for a time that no longer exists because in their view, everyone lived rightly back then. They made better decisions. Circumstances were better.
So how's that different from personal nostalgia again?
Because one breeds contempt. The other does not.
No, but okay.
Personal nostalgia about your old dispensational church, if you liked it and you are still a dispensationalist, that brings you joy and happy and peace. It's the peace nostalgia can bring sometimes. It helps you cope. It's something you personally go to.
But it's not something that I long for.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't want to go back to Israel with those people at that age.
Well, okay. Okay, we're focusing on the Israel thing.
No. What I mean is, I don't want to go back to that time in my life.
No, for personal nostalgia, you don't have to. You don't have to go back to that time. You're perfectly content living in the now.
So it's not a longing.
Then. It's a momentary moment of happiness.
So it's a
reminder of a past event that was pleasant for you.
Right. So as long as we're eliminating longing from the equation in personal nostalgia, I can be on board.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay.
So in that sense, that's the nostalgia that psychologists say is helpful to you.
Sure.
It's a good coping mechanism. It's not escapism.
Right.
That's another thing. That's a thing we're not really talking
about. That's what listeners do when they listen to the show and then realize they've made a horrible mistake.
Then they go back to their lives and realize it's all better. But no, historical nostalgia.
We induce nostalgia. Yeah.
We create longing for a time when their life was better.
It's like if you've ever had labor induced.
What?
Which neither of us have.
True.
That's what we do on this show. We induce nostalgia.
Yeah. When you birthed your Presbyterianism. Never mind. I'm sorry. That was wrong. So personal nostalgia, we've defined that. It's a positive thing. But the historical nostalgia, mm-hmm. poorly worded, but the point is that's where the longing comes in. Mm-hmm. And you are stuck in that longing so much. And to the degree where you have resentment for the present.
Right.
And then you have resentment for the people in the present. And then you start labeling the new generation.
Dadgum millennials.
You have stereotypes that you really start to rely on. It just makes
snowflakes.
That's where nostalgia is problematic.
I think snowflakes are nice.
Yeah, I like snowflakes.
Yeah.
They're all different. They all look wonderful.
That's what they say, but would we really know if two of them were the same?
Like, could we object?
I'm sorry. We need to get back on track.
That's actually a genuinely interesting question, actually. Like, have we ever verified that?
You can't. It is a claim that cannot be verified.
True. That's interesting. Yeah. Anyways, I thought of, so on the positive side of our theme from last week, What sort of things are you nostalgic about?
Not much.
Now, this is fun to talk to you about.
Right.
Because, you know, because you're you.
You should answer the question first. And what kinds of things are you nostalgic about, Jim?
I'm nostalgic about so many things.
Hmm.
I am annoyingly so nostalgic about where my home state.
Hmm.
And this, it gets weird because usually when I talk to someone, not a lot of time goes by before I mention that I'm from Wisconsin.
Huh.
Probably the most
boring. Or that you went to Cornell?
The most boring state in the union, probably. Right. Not really known
well,
for
there's
much.
Wyoming. I heard that's from an old Indian word that means no state here.
No state here. Go. And yes, that's right, folks. I just made an impression of an Indian and I'm...
It sounded like Bill Hasinger. I just assumed it was Bill.
Bill's actually Cherokee. No. So yeah,
he's a helicopter.
And for some reason, it sounded like that my time was so grand there,
mm-hmm.
but in some ways it was. I am nostalgic for a lot of things Wisconsin-y.
Mm-hmm.
I like to keep, I don't like the Badgers, the Wisconsin Badgers. It's
a team or are these team, like little physical scurrying creatures?
Jim doesn't like Badgers.
Badger, mushroom.
Well, would you? I mean, Badgers are pretty nasty. But no, they're the mascot, the team from the University of Wisconsin, Madison.
Okay.
I don't really care much for college sports or that team, but I love getting Wisconsin Badgers shirts from my mom.
Ah.
Because I love wearing things that say Wisconsin or Badgers that remind me of Wisconsin.
I have a few Kansas City Chief t-shirts and sweatshirts from my aunt.
Yeah?
I've never been to Kansas.
So it's really kind of hard for you to be nostalgic about it because yes. You've never really been there. But I love...
This is my life.
Like when I see a picture of a farm silo with a cornfield under it, mm-hmm. I just have to sit there and look at it for a while and think about my youth, mm-hmm. all the cornfields that I've seen growing up. I prefer only to drink Leinenkugel's beer. It's really the only beer that I like. If I have a choice, I will only drink Leinenkugel's beer.
What is it?
A brewery from my hometown.
Oh, okay.
Because I just love drinking it. Whenever I love reading books about Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
because it just makes me feel good, mm-hmm. about how I grew up and reminds me of people in my life from when I lived there that give me joy and peace and happiness. Another big thing, you know, and everyone can relate to this. Music is highly nostalgic for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hugely nostalgic category for me. I listened when I came of age in the 90s.
What does that mean? What age is that?
I think when the first decade of your life, you're not really too concerned about the world around you. To some extent that you are. You are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you don't really care about politics. You don't really care about what the Chamber of Commerce is doing. You're not employed yet. Everything is given to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you start to think about those things in the next decade of your life, your second decade. And that is where, in my opinion, that's your coming of age decade.
So like 11 years
you
old.
You start, yeah, from then on.
Okay.
You start getting musical interests. You start reading a little bit. You've read, of course, in your first, hopefully. You've learned how to read your first decade. But you start choosing.
That's when I finished the institutes.
Great. 9 years old. Oh, that was great. Oh, that's really great, son. I'm glad you're reading Calvin's institutes. Yes, that's another impression of David's dad.
I thought that was a Cherokee.
Sounds nothing like him. That's, but music is highly nostalgic for
sure.
me. In the '90s, I really got into, when I started getting into music, I got into the kind of the '90s alternative rock scene. Also grunge is hugely nostalgic for me. Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, a little bit of Nirvana. When I listen to those bands, I am in a state of nostalgic glee.
Wisconsin.
I'm not necessarily associating that with
No, you said a state of Wisconsin of nostalgic of
nostalgia.
Glee. That's Wisconsin.
Great, thank you. So music.
Mm-hmm.
Big for me. I mean, there are bands that I listen to if I need a break.
Mm-hmm.
I'll listen to a band like Pearl Jam.
Okay.
Now I like that band. They're a good band. I like their music, but sometimes I just listen to them to be transported back to a time when life was really awesome for me, or I was really happy. And then when I'm done with it, I move on.
When you say transported back, do you mean that you have feelings that are similar to those feelings, or do you mean that you have...
Let me give you a specific example that might help you.
Yes.
The first piece of music that I bought for myself was a cassette tape.
I'm sorry.
It was, at the time, it was cool.
What could ever outlast the durability of magnetic tape?
What is that from, by the way?
Homestar Runner.
Okay. It was Pearl Jam, their first album. It's called 10. Mm-hmm. It's their most famous album.
The it's
album
poorly
that,
named.
That they're stop it. That they're known for. Mm-hmm. I think maybe three quarters of the album turned into charting singles, which is hugely rare. And I remember going up to my room to my boombox, which is what they were called back then.
I recall.
Put the cassette in there, pressed play, and I just listened to this music that was so incredible to me. Mm-hmm. There's a song that's it's a song called by Pearl Jam called Oceans. Mm-hmm. When I listen to that song, I sometimes almost cry.
You're thinking of Hillsong, yeah?
Not that Oceans. I don't cry. I kind of cry when I listen to that song.
me too.
God, how that song. I mean, if we're talking about Hillsong songs, I don't know why that one became so famous. It's not that good of a song, but that's just. I'm not going to get into that. So. And it was just a magical experience for me. I was really into music back then. And when you become a teenager, you start to like feel things very intensely. It's called hormones.
True.
And when you can connect music
that time of month
to that time, David, to that time of your life, that memory created can stick with you for a long time. So much so that when you listen to a song called Oceans by Pearl Jam in your 30s, you can kind of tap into those feelings of joy. Mm-hmm. That's what music nostalgically has done for me. So there's a lot of bands that I can go to that kind of create that for me. Like if I'm having a bad day at work, I have playlists from the 90s that I will listen to that will kind of create that feeling for me.
So you've always
music is the primary vehicle of nostalgia for me that brings up the strongest feelings.
You've always been a guy who will just sit and listen to music. Like you're not I mean, you might be utilitarian about music too, but like you will just like put in a cassette or an MP3 or a FLAC and sit and listen and really not really do much of anything else. Maybe like housework or something. Yeah.
Through most of my high school years, I went to bed every night listening to about 3 to 4 hours of music.
Oh, I used to do that too. I used to listen to music to go to sleep, which I don't think ever worked.
Yeah, I would. Well, I would stay up to listen to it.
Oh, okay.
I would just sit there and listen to it and just kind of experience it. So yeah, I did.
That makes sense then that you would have. I mean, music is an interesting vehicle for that because it's a it's a passive activity. You're sitting listening.
Could be.
I mean, it's not active in the sense that like your actions govern how it's going to go.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. True.
And whereas like a lot of other activities, I mean, even like reading a book, depending on your pace, like flipping through the pages and all like that can be different, but music is something that it's a consistent force that you can kind of apply to yourself that is going to be the same experience physically, every single time that you do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, things like speakers and headphones different, maybe, you know, but generally, very, very consistent. And so that makes sense. I've never really been the kind of person to just sit and listen to music. I've done it a little bit with bands that I really, really like, but like I'll listen to two or three tracks. And it's mostly because I feel like I should go do something else. Like I don't have that kind of time.
So music's not your thing.
No, I like listening to music. No.
What I mean to say is music is not really a nostalgic vehicle for you.
You know, I think we've talked about this before. I can listen to certain Cass and Crown songs, certain Keith Green songs.
There you go.
And feel emotions that I used to feel, but I wouldn't call any of that nostalgic because they're mostly like negative feelings.
Really?
Yeah. They're mostly like an anxiety or a longing or, and it is interesting because when I play those songs, I do feel those feelings. And I'm like, what am I feeling this for?
Yeah.
Like I don't have the same problems.
It's funny you should mention that because there's Christian music that I listened to when I was quote on fire. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that previous episode, whatever that meant.
Right.
This is when I first converted.
Right.
As opposed to the second or third time that I did. And I know exactly what songs
I don't don't want to fall away from you.
That's a good song. That's one song that I listened to at that time. And then when I listen, when I, this is bad. This is just so bad. This is not a good way. This is not a good piety. This is not a good way to progress through sanctification. When I'm not feeling very particularly good, or if I'm spiritually depressed, so to speak, I will sometimes access those old songs. Mm-hmm. See if it can drum up. It never works. But I might listen to that Gravity song. I might listen to Indescribable by Chris Tomlin. Some Casting Crowns mm-hmm. from their that first album mm-hmm. do that for me. Mm-hmm. Where I listen to it because when I first listened to it, I was so on fire. Mm-hmm. And there's
well,
a,
I mean,
there's
you still you still so, get the feelings, right? Like they just don't necessarily last past the feelings, track.
But when the track is done,
yeah,
I'm right back to where.
But isn't that interesting?
Well, I mean, well, yeah, it is. It's almost weird. Like I'm, it's almost like I'm conjuring.
Yeah.
My word, I'm a sorcerer.
Yeah.
No, I have to be put to death.
No, I mean, I don't know. I'm just realizing this about myself that like.
But I do this on purpose.
Right.
And I know I'm not supposed to, but I do it anyway. And I do
you are supposed to.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like this idea that like, how do I put this? God knows that we need things to drive us to emotion and to walk us through those emotions. Okay. And so he wrote songs for us to sing, to okay. guide us through those emotions mm-hmm. and instill those emotions in us, induce those emotions, as you would say, mm-hmm. and to help us walk through dealing with those emotions, the emotions that we're already having piously. Mm-hmm. Like you're absolutely supposed to do that. It's just, I would want to argue that the best place right, and right. arguably the only place
yeah.
to do that is the Psalms.
Can I ask you a question on this line of thought? So as a person who believes that a church body should only sing the Psalms when they gather, as opposed to singing a Hillsong song.
Mm-hmm. Oceans by Pearl Jam.
Would there, or if that song happens and it leave the church? No. Can an exclusive psalmody person listen to Casting Crowns away from church, mm-hmm. you're working and you're on your lunch break and you just want to listen to a Casting Crowns song. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you sing along to it? How do you approach that song? Do you like really passively listen to it? Would you allow yourself to feel an emotion?
This is almost like an after show thing, but,
you're right. I know. And we're
well, you wanted me to talk about nostalgia and like, here we are, let's talk about Psalms.
Yeah, we might as well. Just, I feel nostalgic about Psalms. That's about it.
So I think that there are a bunch of different ways and a bunch of different songs that you could listen to in those bunch of different ways. One flaw that a lot of people assume is that worship is an emotion, like that like you True. Are worshiping when you have a certain feeling.
Okay.
And so one thing that you would that people who believe that or think that way would want to do is if they were listening to a Casting Crowns worship song, mm-hmm. they might think it's okay for me to listen to this as long as I don't worship, which for them might right. mean as long as I don't feel worshipful.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of, you're going off on the wrong foot. Like God isn't looking for you to feel a certain, I mean, he is looking for you to feel a certain way, but like that feeling, that like mm-hmm. all weird worshipy feeling, yeah. that's not how God defines worship. And so you can listen to a song and feel that way and not necessarily be worshiping. So anyway, Casting Crowns is a good example because they have a lot of songs that are just edifying. If We Are the Body is a song that, I mean, I have to think through the lyrics there, but yeah. you could listen to that and feel maybe a little bit of conviction, feel different feelings, like music okay. gives you different feelings. And I think that would be fine. That's not worship. Great. That's, you know, you're just cool. enjoying a song, but, listening to worship songs that are literally written so that you can worship with them and praise God with them, songs that are written as prayers. Those are songs that it becomes difficult to do anything useful with them. But I wouldn't say that like an exclusive psalmody person who's listening to one of those songs for the purpose of like understanding where a friend is coming from who says this song is really meaningful. Yeah. I don't think he's inherently sinning by like passively listening to it and listening to the words or whatever.
Okay.
So I think that's probably answers all your questions.
That's good. Yeah. I like that. So you can listen to it in a positive manner.
Right.
That's great then.
But on the psalm thing, I really want to point out, like Jesus was 100% man, 100% God. And as 100% man, he wrestled with all of the same emotions that we wrestle with.
Yeah.
And the means of grace that he had was to sing the Psalms. Like, that was what God gave him, and he did that. We have record of him doing that many times throughout the Gospels. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy to me that a Christian would think, I can work through these emotions with something less than what Jesus worked through. Like I can, Jesus may have needed the Psalter, but like, I'm going to work through on my own with man's help rather than the songs that the Holy Spirit wrote specifically for this purpose. I mean, if you want to supplement, okay, that's one thing. But like, if you are, I don't know, if you're struggling with emotions and you've never sung a psalm, that especially one that deals with those emotions, like, I would really want to strongly encourage you to learn how to sing the psalms, to find some tunes. It's actually really easy. There's probably psalms written to tunes out there that you already know, and try singing those songs and get those like built, like driven into your soul through melody,
yeah.
Just like you have, you know, all the Hillsong songs memorized. And get to that place so that when you have, like, I was talking to somebody who in their life, we're really, really scatterbrained here, that's but right. In their life, they have somebody who is just really, really depressed. Mm-hmm. And, says that basically she said to my friend, actually family member, but whatever, she said, you know, God's abandoned me. And I told her, I said, well, at that point I would have said, are you going to finish the psalm? Because Christians are allowed to feel like God's abandoned me. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. My God, why have you forsaken me? Right? Jesus felt that on the cross. Mm-hmm. Then you finish the Psalm, Psalm 22, sing the whole thing. Yeah. Like, and that's helpful. Like that's a thing that is, it's a salve for the soul. Yeah. And we go through the, you know, Psalm 42 helps deal with depression. I don't know. This is just an encouragement. If we're talking about how music can be nostalgic and music can induce emotion, it would feel wrong for me not to at least mention the Psalms.
Well, that's perfectly allowed on this show.
I'm actually really excited for, like, because I'm not emotionally healthy. I think a lot of the way that I manage my emotions is just by ignoring them and pretending that they're not there, or, and they're not strong, so I can do that. It's easier for me to do that maybe than for other people. But I'm really excited to go to a congregation mm-hmm. where every Sunday, twice, we're going through and singing through these Psalms. With God's people, not just on my own, or with Sarah, singing the Psalms together, and going through that, feeling like you're going through the same emotions corporately, like everybody identifies with you because we all just sang the same thing.
Yeah, well, great. I think that's great. And certainly, someone who does not hold the conviction of exclusive psalmody can certainly benefit and should and needs to get on singing the Psalms.
Hmm.
I want to fight with you, but after you say it that way, I look like the idiot or the mean guy for arguing with someone who said it that way. There are some distinctions I think that should. Okay, you know what? I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this.
So Pearl Jam.
Sing the songs. Yeah, finally. No, sing the Psalms. Yeah. I want to sing the Psalms. I want to do that in a congregational setting.
Mm.
And we just don't really do it.
Most churches don't.
We do some psalm paraphrases, which I don't think is quite cut.
Well, we do like paraphrases of, I say we, evangelicals do like paraphrases of one verse of a psalm and then, a whole bunch of human right. words and then paraphrase of another or a chorus that's like.
It's verse, chorus. That format means you have to go back to things. But yeah, you're right. So back to nostalgia. So yeah, music does that for me in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Food?
Yeah.
Like beer, you mentioned, I guess.
Yeah, beer does that.
I know I know food does that for a lot of people.
This is going to sound ridiculous.
Right.
But casseroles do it.
Jim, you are the Baptist that this show deserves.
I'm serious. Like, tater tot casserole brings me back. there's this thing that we didn't have a lot of money growing up. We had enough. We weren't poor. But that significantly limited the food that we ate.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we would have just toast
mm-hmm.
with like this. I don't think it's even sold anymore, but it's like this white gravy with these paper thin cubes of ham in it that you just, it's like a mix. You pour it into a bowl of mm-hmm. water and mix it up and then pour that over the toast. And that would be dinner sometimes.
Mm.
Now that doesn't sound very appetizing.
At least it's not soup.
But whenever I eat something like that, I'm reminded of growing up and eating stuff like that. Simple, cheap, comfort food is highly nostalgic for me. Easy, cheap casseroles are highly nostalgic for me. I'm just transported back into my mom's kitchen. And the smells growing up, smell is highly evocative. Smell is probably the biggest driver of nostalgia of all.
Good old factory senses.
Yeah. I mean, it's they're so evocative of memory. And that happens for all of us. I'm sure that there are sometimes where you smell something and are transported back to when you were.
No, no, I'm kind of serious.
Not like, only do I don't have emotions, I don't have a sense of smell.
No, I have a sense of smell. And that makes it really easy for me to identify smells I've smelled before. I don't think there's any like.
Really? That's not. It is. There are no powerful emotions or memories that are drummed up when you smell a certain thing.
Maybe I just don't have. Maybe all my powerful memories and associations just were in places that didn't smell strongly.
That's a good point. It's possible.
I don't know.
Yeah. The sensory memory is a very powerful thing.
Right.
That's interesting that you said that.
No, for me, the most I can relate to you on is, I think, the music thing. And it's not even positive emotions.
Yeah. Well, like, what about movies? Like, do movies do it for you? Like, are there movies from your childhood that, you know, that could hold up? Like, there's a lot of them.
I could give you Star Trek. The TNG is okay. One that we're watching through right now, but it's not like a lot of positive. Maybe I feel a kind of sense of comfort. Okay. And maybe that's just because of the familiarity.
Maybe. Well, that's good. That's perfect. That's kind of nostalgic for you. It is for me too. When
it's also very disappointing.
Well, yeah, because you watch
it doesn't hold up.
The graphics are pretty bad, though not terrible.
No, it's not really the graphics. I can live with that. It's just TV was just a different animal back then. Like the music, the pacing, the seriousness. I mean, Captain Picard, you know, Patrick Stewart is an amazing actor, but he just doesn't fit with that cast sometimes.
Yeah.
In, you know, standing against a cardboard projector.
Right. I mean, yeah. Let's just say movie budgets were big back then, but TV budgets were really small back then.
They're still really small. It's just you can get more bang for your buck.
They're a little bit bigger now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so movies, well, TV. So you mentioned a TV show. That's good.
Yeah. But I wouldn't say it's a strong association. Like,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like the Goonies for me.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
And you should tell me more about The Goonies. Sorry.
The Goonies is a hugely nostalgic movie for a lot of people my age. That movie, the phenomenon of Stranger Things. The reason people go so nuts about that is because there are so many references to their childhood, to their youth. And they love that show for that reason. That's one of the reasons why I love it. I love it for the story and the characters. It's not just nostalgia for me, but that is a nostalgia vehicle raging down the road. But it reminds me of things like Goonies. You know, they brought Sam Astin into that show because he was a child actor in the 80s who started movies like The Goonies. And it was hugely cool. Did you ever see The Goonies?
No.
Well, you're not missing too much. But, I mean, because I watched it with my wife in my late 20s. And I thought, well, okay, this might firmly belong in my childhood. it's still good. But yeah, movies do that almost as powerfully as music. But so Star Trek TNG is good. What was your question?
No, I was going to be honest with you.
What's the honesty?
I don't know if I can do it anymore. No, okay. I had a good childhood. Like I can't say that like I was miserable all the time, but I also have a lot of negative emotions associated with childhood. Most of them around being kind of a loner,
we've
talked about this before.
Yeah.
And I feel like the last 5 years, and there, it's no coincidence that that coincides with getting married. The last 5 years of my life have been the best 5 years of my life.
Great.
Like by far and away. And so maybe part of the reason I'm not nostalgic about stuff is like, I'm the happiest that I've been.
Great.
Yeah. Like I don't have a reason to go back and think about how great this was or how nice that was. The closest thing would have been the Israel trip that I told you about, but really like, I mean, that was nice and all, but I'm still way happier now. Yeah.
But the smaller instances of personal nostalgia, you do have access to those things. Like the Star Trek team. You don't need to be you don't need to be transported back to a time when your life was great.
That's good, because I don't trust the transporters.
Okay, good. okay, yeah. So, yeah, I
that's where the historical nostalgia comes in.
Right.
You long too much for a time that is no longer.
Right.
It's really just a distraction at best. Yeah, definitely not that.
Well, no, and I just feel like I don't really have a need to be to cope, as you would say. And like you used that word when you were describing personal nostalgia previously.
Well, it can function as a coping mechanism, but it's not exclusively a coping mechanism.
Yeah. Yeah, but I guess
you can access nostalgia when your life is going just fine.
I just don't think about the past very much. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I don't have all. I mean, I sometimes I wonder if I'm weird because I struggle to remember my past.
I don't know. I'm kind of the extreme. We're polar. There's nothing.
That's,
in the,
yeah.
There's nobody in the middle. I think a lot of people are in the middle between you and I.
Hmm.
So I don't think I'm the best example of how nostalgia should work in a normal person.
Right.
Because I take it to the extreme, I think, in positive ways, sometimes in negative ways. But you are, you know, you're on the opposite side.
Yeah.
And maybe we're just not relating to anybody right now. Just now occurred to me.
Well, I mean, talk to me again in 15 years.
Yeah. We're creating nostalgia now.
Like I do wonder if that's going to be the case, if I'm going to be nostalgic about when Sarah and I first got married or, you know, when we first started Relay. Like, I have a hunch I'll probably be nostalgic, but I don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have more to be happy about right now than I have to be nostalgic about in my past, I think.
Well, that's good, too.
I like that. Yes, that's
good. You're
creating, that's not to say that I'm a happy person.
Yeah. Well, you're creating memories now that you can have, like, you access.
15. I guess I should sit down and listen to some music.
Yeah, let's let next episode we'll just
or eat some tater tots.
Eat some tater tots. Listen to music. Wear a shirt with a badger on it, and eat some corn or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's stuff that I could bring up.
I just gave you like 15% of what I got. I have so much more because it's just that's how it works for me.
There's something wrong with you.
There is. There is. But hopefully, I'm still useful for the present. That's where I need to be careful.
Mm.
Where I'm not just longing for a time that is no longer and I won't have access to, and it hurts my present temperament.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I need to watch out for.
So is there for you, not that I'm arguing this is a means of grace that everybody needs to experience, but is there for you a spiritual upside to being nostalgic? Is there anything that's helpful in your spiritual life?
Yes.
That wasn't like an accusative question. I was just trying to bring it flogging.
I think I read a story. One of the reasons why we're talking about nostalgia today is because I remember reading a story about a guy who had a panic attack in his car. And he instinctively turned on the radio to a classic rock station.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, it calmed him considerably.
Like Saul.
Like, okay, yeah. That David played and it pleased the Lord.
Please, Saul. You're thinking of, I heard there was.
Yeah. I know it's not connected, but I just, you said Saul and I just thought of that immediately. By the way,
yeah.
I am getting really tired of people using that song as a memorial song or as a song to sing on the to commemorate like the death of somebody.
Is that what people do?
The you know the show The Voice?
No.
Well, it's a show that kind of.
Is that feminazi show in daytime TV?
No, that's the View.
Sorry, I got Voice and View confused because earlier we got show and talk confused.
It's a singing competition show.
Right. I gotcha. Like,
And I believe after a shooting, after a shooting, they all sang the four voices. Took turns and sang through Hallelujah.
Oh, right? You really meant shooting. I thought like a shooting of the show. I'm sorry.
No. So they sang it to commemorate as a memorial, as a grieving song. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that song sung in that context.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
And it doesn't make any sense to me. If people read the lyrics of that song,
right.
It's not a song you sing.
Honestly, it doesn't make any sense.
It was written by Leonard Cain, and he doesn't make sense when he writes songs.
Right. It's pretty.
The melody.
What the kids would call pretty AH.
Right. Well, Leonard Cain's voice is pretty awful. His version, that song wouldn't go where it went.
I'm thinking of the one that's on Shrek.
Jeff Buckley. Yeah. On what?
Shrek. They play it during Shrek.
They do?
They play a version during the first Shrek movie.
Okay. Well, there was a version sung by Jeff Buckley. It's just him and a guitar.
Mm.
And that's what made the song.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Anyways.
I don't know what I was saying before.
Oh, how this positively helps you spiritually.
Right. And I started talking about Hallelujah. I think, and so this man listened to just a classic rock station, mm-hmm. and it gave him a peace and a comfort and a calm. Mm-hmm. And he called it the peace of nostalgia as a means that God has given to help people calm.
All right.
One of them. And I've never heard it said that way before. I thought it was bad to, if you're going through a hard time, mm-hmm. in this man's case, it was a panic attack. Mm-hmm. You would think, I guess I'm just supposed to read the Bible and I'll feel better when I'm done. Or you have to do a churchy thing.
Right.
Or you have to pray. Of course you have to pray. Mm-hmm. But I never heard someone say out loud and not get yelled at for it, that maybe you could listen
to the Rolling Stones.
Listen to the Rolling Stones. Angie. You could do that and get the same effect.
Right.
It's a calming influence. And when I read that, it might have confirmed something I already believed.
Hmm.
That it's okay, and God has given some means, mm-hmm. through he has given us some means through culture, mm-hmm. that we can utilize in some sense to calm us or to give us a peace or a comfort in those times. And I believe that that's true.
Yeah, I would agree.
Great.
Well, do you want me to fight with you though?
We can fight. Let's do that.
Okay.
Well, that's the last thing we'll do.
So baptism.
Okay. The calming effect of baptism on this, the nostalgic effect.
You know what? I'll bet that if I load it up, I'm trying to come up with nostalgias for me.
Okay.
I'll bet that if I loaded up this game that I used to play a lot, it was kind of an escapism kind of thing for me.
GoldenEye for me.
It's called America's Army. It was a recruitment tool put out by the U.S. government. They had built it for training simulations for their soldiers, and then they turned it into a game and released it.
Great.
It was actually a surprisingly good game. It was like, you know, the government doesn't do much well, but for whatever reason, that game was really good.
They developed decent games.
I had a bunch of online friends who were really nice to me, in contrast to my real life friends who, I don't know if they were actively mean to me, but I wasn't good at reaching out to them, and they weren't good at, anyway. So I had these online friends. I spent hours and hours playing with these friends, and,
there you go.
Yeah, I feel like if I were to play that game again, I'd probably experience some nostalgia. Also, that's probably flooded with hackers.
Okay.
Because that's how old games die.
Well, okay. Well, I believe that we can end the show on a positive note, that we found something that David can be nostalgic about.
Which is weird.
Which is, you must feel awful.
Like that thing is the thing that I finally came up with at the end of the episode. That's weird.
Well, we kind of expected that.
That's not Pearl Jam, though.
It's not Pearl Jam. I'm probably going to go listen to that song when I go home.
You go right ahead.
And it'll take me back. But hey, let's go ahead and end the show.
All right.
We might not see you folks next week.
We won't see you folks next week.
Yeah, we're just
going
to be.
Where are you going?
Home.
Oh, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, that might. We'll see how that works. We'll do our best. But if you miss us for a week, you miss us for a week. We did it all summer, so you should be used to it by now.
That's true.
I'm sure you won't complain. We'll be back the week after that, ready to go. So, folks, we'll see you later. Thanks.
Bye.
Won't someone save me from this podcast? Is it over or just dragging along? Will these two guys talk forever? Or will they quit if I sing them this song? Started off so tongue-in-cheek, now it seems it's almost over, so I'll just have to wait another week. I'm gonna miss all the self-deprecation. I wonder if they'll ever bring it back, but if they don't, I'll take their inventory. Jackson.